Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Chalk Talk. I am your host, Kim Davis. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It was a long night, but it was a pretty fantastic night here in Houston, Texas. I tell you what. Whoops. Where are we? There we go. I'm connecting with our folk over on Facebook Live so we can bring them into the room. We want everybody to be here and a part of today's show. There we go. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am your host, Kim Davis, and I am super excited to be here today. I hope that I still have a voice. I do. Not that I was screaming. I've just been up. I feel like we should just replay that open music one more time. I have been up. It is exciting. We are... Hey, Carlisa. Thank you so much. My Dodger friend from Los Angeles watching the game. And I have to tell you something. We are going to talk today. Welcome to Chalk Talk, everybody. It's going to be a full show, a lot to talk about. I have some great guests. Jimmy Lee Solomon, who's a senior vice president with Major League, an executive vice president with Major League Baseball for about 23 years. He's going to join me on the show today. Mike Jackson, a former pitcher, is going to join the show today. He was a closer in the bigs for 17 years. So we are super excited about what we're going to get from Mike Jackson and the fact that he is going to be a part of today's show. And you know what else, guys? Here's what I think I might do. I have been having some problems with my Be Live platform. So what I think I'm going to do is to move the show just to my regular Facebook Live page, because today's show is one that we just don't want there to be a problem, right? We don't want there to be a problem. And I don't want you guys to miss anything. So I'm going to hang on with me. We're gonna make this transition really smoothly. And because today is not the day that we want to not... that we don't want to be able to. Astros won it all. They absolutely did. It was an amazing game. And we are going to talk about really what happened. Sure, the Astros, here's the basics of what happened. The Astros scored more runs than the Dodgers did, right? So they got 5-1. They won the game. That's a wrap. But how did they get to that? You know, this game of baseball has changed so much. It has changed so much that you know, there's this whole thing now that's a part of baseball called analytics. And so they look at, you know, it's research and numbers. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that plays into it, but also how you have to have that mix of the analytics, you know, with the, you know, the little ball, and with the human element, you know, because that ultimately is really what you have to have happen. So I am going to, we're going to talk about all of that on today's show. And I'm going to move where you guys are seeing the show, since we're having, because you can't see me right now from what it looks like. It was analytics and intuition. You're so right, Brother Abdul. It was both. And one of the things I really like about A.J. Hinch is that he's pretty balanced, and that he went with what he thought was the right thing. He interjects the human instinct. And he didn't make quick knee-jerk reactions because of challenges early on. So while the national media is giving the Houston Astros credit, right, they're giving the Houston Astros credit about, you know, about the fact that, you know, the Astros are a really good ball club, right? So they're a really good ball club. The Astros won it. It's not that the Dodgers lost it, but they are talking about, you know, what Dave Rogers, what he should have done with Kershaw, what he should have done with, you know, Durish, and in terms of making changes with the pitchers. I want to talk about that with two baseball guys, one who was a pitcher, a closer, to me, which is one of those most, he was a Ken Giles, and I don't want to compare him to Ken Giles because Mike Jackson was a successful closer. Ken Giles is a closer for the Houston Astros who just hasn't, you know, he hasn't had his best showing as an Astro. I mean, he hasn't shown real well this summer, and definitely in the playoffs, and definitely his outing in Game 4. So, but that position is just pressure-packed because usually when they bring you in, you know, there's still a chance. They're still in the game. The team is still in the game. The team still has a chance to win it, and they need you to close it, to shut it down, to shut the other team's offense down. And so the game is always on the line. Like, you don't bring your closer in if the game is out of reach. There's no point in bringing your closer in for that. So when you see your closer, you know, you either win it or you blow it most times. So I want to talk to Mike Jackson about just that role. And he's been on the show before of being a closer, right? And, okay, so here we go. So listen, guys, I am going to, if you're watching the show right now, I'm going to actually restart this broadcast straight through my Facebook page and not through the BeLive platform because there are some, apparently there are some glitches because you guys can't see the video. Like, I can't see the video. It's as though it's not connecting, and I'm not sure why that is. I'm going to try one more time to connect this camera. And if it doesn't connect, then we're going to just go – we're just going to do it old school and just go straight through Facebook Live, right? We're going to do it that way so that – here we go. I'm going to my Kim White Davis page, and I'm going to ask you guys to just – you're on the same page, but you're just going to click into the new broadcast that I am going to create right here. Because I don't want you to miss any of it, and I definitely don't want you to miss our guest. We have some amazing guests today, as I mentioned, some baseball folk, but baseball people who can really help to make it plain. You know, I know you guys appreciate my input, but I like to bring your real experts who played the game, who worked in the game, whether it's been from a management side or an executive side, just to give you a sense of what really happens as we're talking about baseball, right? So that's what I'm doing. I'm creating this right now. And that is kind of like, you know what? This is kind of like live television, right? It's kind of like live TV. So, which is why it's kind of cool for me. No, let's not do that. Because it reminds me of, why won't it allow me to? All right, so here's the deal. If you're on the BeLive page right now, I want you to hang in there and just know that I'm going to end this BeLive broadcast and jump over just to Facebook Live, right? And we're going to do it on the fly so that you can join me there and we can create a new post and create a show. And here we are. So that means I have to do it from my tablet or something. That's what it is. I can't do it from a laptop, but that's okay. All right. There we go. All right. So if you are listening, all right, everybody. So we're there. We are doing welcome, welcome. I've moved the show over to just a straight Facebook Live on my Kim White Davis page. Thank you guys for joining and being part of today's show. Let me get that light out of your background so it doesn't, like, hit you in the eye. So, listen, I am excited to have you here, and we are going to talk about all things baseball today. If you are a part of the B-Live show, I hope I'm going to give you a few seconds to jump over here and get ready. For our guest this morning, right? Because, and we have our first guest that's going to be calling us in. Listen, I promised you an exciting show. It has been, you guys have heard more baseball over the past month. You guys hear baseball on my show throughout the entire summer. But I promised you somebody who can really help us understand all the stuff we've been talking about and all of the things that you heard on national television and that you've been texting and tweeting and emailing me about. Jimmy Lee Solomon, who has been a friend of Chalk Talk in the past. He is one of the foremost experts as it relates to baseball, sports, from an executive level. And first of all, Jimmy Lee, I know you are busy, so thank you so much for being a part of the show this morning. How about those Astros?
It was very exciting. Thank you for having me on the show. It was a fantastic time, fantastic evening. The celebrations around the city were just tremendous. I really enjoyed it.
You know, I actually tried to go out and get some, you know, quick video and sound with people. I tried to go to Academy. I don't know what I was thinking. I couldn't get anywhere near Academy to park, to even walk over to see it. But, you know, Jimmy Lee, I remember back in when the Rockets won the championship in 93-94 and then 94-95, I remember how the city responded, and it's just really exciting to see. I will say this, and you know this, you know, better than I do and better than most. I mean, I think that, well, first of all, I think the national media has done a pretty good job of giving Houston credit for being a really good team, that Houston won the series. But there's still some thought that I've heard a lot of national guys this morning talking about what the manager of the Dodgers didn't do in terms of moves that he did not make and what he should have done and how now somehow the Dodgers are a failure. Has baseball gotten to a point where there's so much interjected in terms of this analytics piece that then the human instinct part is not really appreciated? Because you have to always have that, right?
I agree with that. We've gotten to a point now where analytics are so prevalent that people forget to even look at it with the naked eye. Many of the older managers, Dusty Baker is a good example, are guys who aren't as analytics prone, and therefore they get criticized constantly whenever a mistake is made. Of course, you talk about the decisions that were made by Roberts on the Dodgers side, but also what if the Astros had lost? Think about the decision to bring in the closer, Giles, when the Astros, I mean, two different times in game four. Think about that. You know, AJ may not have a job right now if that had held up. But, you know, I think that, yeah, we are getting to that point. I think that you can't forget the human element, though. And I think that if we lose the human element, a lot of the game will be lost.
Do you know, I remember when Jim Crane bought this team and there was kind of almost a fire sale, you were still working in baseball, and he said back then, I'm going to build this team through the farm system. The farm system was kind of one of your babies. So is this the way that we think we're going to see teams do it moving forward? It was hard early on because they were almost like a minor league team on the field with one or two players. But now it's almost like he's starting to see the fruits of that approach to building a roster.
Well, unfortunately, you know, the fans nowadays won't give you that kind of time anymore. I think Crane got very lucky. He did get a lot of very good players. He has a core nucleus of players of about four or five guys who are very young, who are under contract for two or three more years, and he'll be able to keep this team at a very high level. Unfortunately, if he had made a few mistakes and some of those guys were not as good as they are, would Houston, with the fans, give him 2-3 more years of rebuilding? Probably not. So, and Houston is probably, because it's his first championship, his first time winning a World Series, is probably a little more patient than other cities. I know New York will give you about one season. Boston will give you a season. You got to get a winner in 1 or 2 years, or they're going to get rid of you. And that's the problem nowadays. Fans are very impatient. They want to have championships, and they want them quickly. And I think Houston won't be as patient next time.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, fans do want it quickly. Here's one of the things, Jimmy Lee, that I found really interesting about the Astros' run to the title. They beat three of the most storied franchises in Major League Baseball. The Boston mm-hmm. Red Sox, the New York Yankees, the L.A. Dodgers, they went through those teams to get to the championship. How fitting is that for this city, especially since everyone's calling it a city of destiny, because people around the country and around the world are pulling for Houston because of what happened during Hurricane Harvey?
You're absolutely right. Hurricane Harvey, people saw pictures of water and 54 inches of rain coming down in an 18-hour period. People still aren't enough. Right now, over 1,000 homes have been impacted and are still impacted and not habitable. People think the city's back on its feet, but it's really not. So this entire run by the Astros really gave the city something to kind of come together. And I think Mayor Turner's done a tremendous job of handling not only the flood, but handling the spirits of his city, getting them back into the idea of cheering for something and not being in despair constantly. And I think it's been a fantastic destiny would be a good word to use. I think they did go through tough franchises, but their last time in 2005 went into the World Series. They went through some tough franchises also. They beat the Braves, they beat the Cardinals, and they lost to the White Sox. But still, they went through some tough franchises.
You mentioned Mayor Turner.
In the back talking to me.
I know, right? She wasn't able to make it to daycare today. You mentioned Mayor Turner, and I think it's really interesting how he's managed what's happened through Harvey, but how he has been right there every step of the way. Like, I was at the game on Sunday night till, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I saw him standing behind home plate. I mean, he's not just somewhere in an office saying this is great for the city. He is really, I don't know when the man sleeps, but he is really always everywhere. It seems like the city needs him to be, and I hope people recognize that about him.
I hope they do too, because he's one of my best friends. I've known him since law school, and I talk to him probably 2 or 3 times a day. And he is constantly giving everything he has to the city in every form, every fashion. Not just in sporting events, but he was in the shelters when Harvey hit. He was out there with the high water vehicles, riding down into these various inundated areas, trying to let people see that he was involved. Even with the potholes situation when he first became mayor, he was out there at 6 a.m. in the morning giving the public works guys donuts in the morning. I mean, it was he's really, really taken this city on because it's his city. He was born and raised here, and he considers himself Houston proud.
All right, Jimmy Lee, I know you have a meeting. Before I let you go, we're talking all about baseball today, but I cannot have a mind like yours, especially one with the, you know, I always call you my legal expert, my baseball expert. But I want to just tap into your lawyer side for a moment. There is a lot happening around sports, especially in the National Football League, with the player protests, and with you got a sponsor in Papa John saying, listen, we're not making the money we're making. We're thinking about doing something different. You have Colin Kaepernick saying, I think the owners are colluding and filing a lawsuit. From a legal standpoint, how are any of those things possible? Can Kaepernick actually sue the league and have a chance? Can a sponsor pull out because they don't feel the league is managing a crisis as they see it the way they should? Legally, are those things possible?
Well, yes. It's based on Papa John's sponsorship contract with the NFL. It depends what the terms are. If there are clawback provisions or based upon performance or based upon his revenue, then he'll be able to use those provisions. If they're not there, the NFL will hold him to those obligations. So it depends on the contract. It's purely a contractual situation with respect to Papa John's. With respect to Kaepernick, of course, he can argue. We all can see that possibly there's something going on. Kaepernick's too good a quarterback not to be playing on the team right now. But it is hard to prove, because you've got to prove intent when you're talking about collusion. You've got to prove that they all basically got together, conspired, and decided that he is not going to be on an NFL field. Now, that's hard to find unless you have a smoking gun, like an email somewhere or some voicemail that somebody happened to take. You know, but you never know, because who would have thought that McNair would have made the comment he made in an open meeting to be actually heard by former and some current players. And, of course, that got out. So you never know. But it's going to be hard to prove.
All right. Jimmy Lee Solomon, as always, thank you so much. I appreciate you being a part of the show, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody. Listen, here's what's cool about being a part of Chalk Talk. We know some kind of cool people. So Jimmy Lee Solomon spent 23 years in Major League Baseball, was an executive vice president, really big in terms of what they did with the farm system and just across the sport all the way around. So one of the things we've been talking about as we've gone through this process of the World Series is the pitching. So I thought I'd bring back Mike Jackson, who is obviously somebody who knows firsthand about being in that position, being in the pressure cooker, being on that mound during the World Series. Mike was a closer for, I keep giving him more time, but 17 years in the majors. First of all, good morning, Michael, and thank you for being a part of Chalk Talk today.
Good morning, Kim. Happy to be on your show again.
So I want to ask you, when you saw the series, and even if we just go to last night, you know, because this morning a lot of the armchair managers are talking about moves Dave Roberts didn't make with his pitchers, whether he should have gone and gotten, you know, Duris earlier, whether he should have changed the rotation so that Hershaw would have pitched in different games. As a pitcher, did you like the way both managers manage their pitching rotation or not?
I mean, I think they did a pretty good job under the circumstances, especially the Astros. They had a few question marks down in the bullpen, and, you know, you're kind of limited with the amount of moves that you can make when you have guys that you don't trust coming in the ballgame. On behalf of the Dodgers, Dave Roberts, I thought he left Yu Darvish in a little bit too long. After he gave us the first two runs, then I had to put him on a short leash the next inning, and I had to go with some guys that's been proven all year to stop the bleeding.
You know, Morton came in for Houston and actually got the win last night, and I was listening to an interview with Brian McCann, the catcher for the Astros, who's obviously caught some pretty amazing pitchers, and he said that last week, When he caught from Charlie Morton, that was some of the best stuff he has ever seen. You know, do you think that Morton is going to be one of those rising stars as a pitcher? And who in that Astros rotation impressed you the most in the World Series?
Of course. I mean, we all knew what Verlander was capable of doing since he'd been over at Houston. I mean, he had Boston and pitched phenomenally well. But I was impressed with Lance McCullers. This is his first time actually being in a situation where you can go out there and win a ball game. Even the game he came out of the bullpen and shut down the team the rest of the game, he really impressed me a lot as far as being a young guy, being able to handle the pressure of pitching in the World Series. And I know last night he got a little out of control. He hit about three or four batters, but that's all part of the game. And that made the Dodgers hit us uncomfortable because they knew he was coming inside. He was a little bit erratic, but he was able to keep his composure and not give up any runs.
Obviously, people around the watch baseball, you know, everybody knows about Jose Altuve. I think it's still amazing. You know, if they list him at 5'6", that means he's probably 5'5". But just to see what he is able to do at that size, but – when you put Altuve in the mix with that entire Astros defense, that has to, as a pitcher, give you some confidence to know what you have behind you when you have a Correa and an Alex Bregman and a Springer. You can go all the way around, even through the outfield. Do you feel even better as a pitcher when you've got that kind of defense behind you?
Oh, you feel comfortable when you make the mistakes that the guys can make the plays behind you. With that type of defense that you have behind you, your main objective is to keep the ball in the ballpark. And I think the Astros pitchers did a great job of that last night. And when you, like I said, when you have a defense with all the great talent behind you, I mean, these guys made plays after plays throughout the playoffs. So it gives the pitcher a more comfortable feeling when he goes out there that if they do hit the ball, your defense is able to make plays.
Can you at all relate to what Ken Giles must have been feeling after game four in Houston? And, I mean, you know, fans are that. Fans are sharp for fanatics. So, you know, the fact that they booed him. But just the pressure of, you know, you go out and giving up a lead in such an important game. They all matter, but none matter more than these final games in the World Series. What is that like as a pitcher when it's all on your shoulders and you just aren't able to get it done?
I mean, that's a terrible feeling. You go out there and you know, you're trying your best and you just can't get it done. And the fans let you know about it. So, I mean, it's a gut-checking a reality that you have to look at yourself in the mirror and figure out what you're doing wrong very quickly, because when you're not getting the job done in the postseason, you know, everything is blown out of proportion. But that's the life we live. And that's the job we have, and you have to go out there and try to be successful more times than you fail.
If you look at this Astros roster, this Astros lineup, and after they get over, you know, a few days of celebrating, what we know is that Jeff Luhnow and his staff are going back at it, right? They've got to figure out, how do we improve upon this? How do we get back here for next year? Is the bullpen going to be what he focuses on, or what they? If you were trying to enhance this roster, is that where you would focus, improving the bullpen?
First, I'll lock up all those five core guys, or six, however many those guys are, who played just about every game. I'll lock all those guys up. And then my second challenge will be to address the bullpen needs. I need to go in and get me three lights-out guys, seven, eight, ninth guys that I know without a doubt that when we get in that seventh, eighth, ninth inning, that we got lights out guys down there that can come in and shut the game down.
Well, it will be interesting. As always, Mike, I appreciate it. Enjoy it. I mean, you're a baseball guy. I know that you were pulling for the Indians, but, you know, you kind of got on board with the Astros, so we appreciate you for that, my friend.
Well, you know what? But you play for a lot of teams. You know, that's a fortunate thing, but I was rooting for my Indians. Of course, my Indians got knocked out. I'm going with my home team, the Astros. Of course, I played with them 1 year. And definitely being a lifetime Giant with that rival with the Dodgers, definitely want the Dodgers to win.
All right. Well, listen, enjoy the day. It's a great weather in Houston. I'm sure you will be a part of the celebration. And we will talk again soon. Thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate it.
I enjoyed the show. Thank you very much, Kim.
All right. All right, that was Mike Jackson. Mike Jackson spent 17 years in the major leagues as a closer, and he pitched in the Marlins World Series back in the day. So I'm always interested in what pitchers think, but especially closers. I mean, closers, he was like, and I hate to compare him to Ken Giles because that's not a compliment, right? Because Ken Giles is not a name that people in the city right now are embracing. But here's the deal. Everybody on that Astros roster gets a World Series ring. You know, I watched post-game, I don't know, till about 3 o'clock in the morning because they stayed on the Major League Baseball on the network and then on Fox Sports 1. And, you know, you see a guy like Carlos Beltran get a World Series ring after 20 years in the Major League. And now he's known for his postseason play, you know, historically. He didn't do very much. He didn't get a lot of time in the postseason with the Astros this year. But to a person, to a man, you heard from the staff, from A.J. Hinch, to all of these guys on the roster talk about what having a Carlos Beltran on that team, in that clubhouse, what it meant for them to have his veteran leadership how it impacted and helped them get to where they are. So, you know, everybody has a role. You know, you saw, you know, Evan Gattis, who was a DH, but only a DH when they played the games in Houston, because as you know, there's no DH. We learned, you know, there's no designated hitter in the National League. So, but when he got a chance to come in, you know, that was exciting. Brian McCann, you know, I talked about this. Maybe it was on one of the TV shows I did last week. I said, you know, Brian McCann is one of those, is a person that people sometimes overlook in terms of the importance, but the way he has called these games behind the plate, I think has been, in all the pitchers, Verlander, Keuchel, you know, Morton, McCullough, they've all said it. Brian McCann has been a huge factor in how this pitching staff has performed. And so, you know, to see him last night making his way around home plate, he played, he's not exactly the speedster, and it was just fun. These guys are in the most important game of their lives last night, and they're having fun. Carlos Correa is sitting there at the dugout waiting for him to come in, and he's doing this little kind of jogging gesture, making fun of him, but in, you know, in a good way, because he scored. The Astros got out early. They scored 5 runs in the first 2 or 3 innings, and I thought, oh, my gosh, there's so much time left in this game. But I was hoping they'd get more runs. I was hoping they'd pad that lead a little bit, but they got what they needed from the pitchers. Every time one of those pitchers got in a little bit of trouble, you know, no outs, runners on first and second, runners on the corners on first and third, they found a way to pitch out of it. And, you know, just a credit to this entire staff, and a credit to A.J. Hinch, who made the moves he needed to make, who trusted himself and his instincts, and who trusted his guys. George Springer was the MVP of the World Series, right? I think that was probably hands down. I'm sure that most people who had a vote last night, I don't think it was a tough decision to pick George Springer to be the MVP. So he starts out in game 1 of the World Series, and he goes 0-for-4. He strikes out. He has an awful night at the plate in game 1. And people around the country were saying, people locally, sportscasters on the networks were saying, well, maybe A.J. Hinch should drop him down in the lineup, move Bregman up. You know, there was all this. And I was like, nope, you've got to go with who brung you, right? A.J. Hinch knows what George Springer has meant to this lineup the entire season. And so, yeah, he had a rough night in game 1. He came back in game 2 and was nothing short of amazing, and has been that throughout the entire series. He starts out in game 7 last night with a leadoff double, and then later he hits a 2-run home run. I mean, George Springer has been nothing short of amazing. He's a great defensive player. You know, he had a defensive miscalculation, if you want to call it, in game 5 on Sunday night at Minute Maid Park. He came back where a run scored. He just badly misjudged the ball on a play that he usually makes. I mean, he makes that play, right? Well, he didn't make that play, but he comes back at the bottom of that inning, and he hits a home run. He gets that run right back. So, you know, he's just a guy that you have to be excited about. They have so many guys. Listen, you guys, there are so many stories from this World Series. And then how about this? After the game, in the middle of his interview on Fox, it's almost like Carlos Correa says, you know what, hey, Ken Rosenthal, just give me a second. He drops down to a knee, and he proposes to his girlfriend. Okay, really? That's high drama. I mean, it was so exciting. And when they show Big Papi on the Fox broadcast watching this moment later, the look on his face is priceless. I mean, he just looked stunned. It was nothing short of... You can't make this stuff up, people. You can't write a better script than what we saw with the Houston Astros run to the World Series championship. So you have the Carlos Correa piece, you know, the 23-year-old shortstop who people compare to A-Rod. So he's talking to A-Rod. They're sitting together on the set last night. And that's a pretty high compliment to be compared to Alex Rodriguez. And let me just stop for a minute. And can I say this about Alex Rodriguez? You know, we knew that he was, if you saw him play, obviously he's an amazing baseball player, Hall of Fame base. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's a really good broadcaster. Like, I enjoy his perspective. He clearly studies. He does his homework and his research. but he knows it. He's able to interject this information into his analysis and his conversations. And it's not because he's got a whole bunch of notes and he's just reading you a bunch of stats. I'm just super impressed. I mean, I've always been an A-Rod fan. Just, you gotta love him. And, you know, come on, he's not bad to look at. Let's be clear. Let's just be honest about that. But I really appreciate his work as a broadcaster, as an analyst. I like that whole the whole little set of guys, you know, the Big Poppy and the Big Hurt, Frank Thomas. But A-Rod really does something a little different. And so I appreciate his work. I appreciate what he brings to the broadcast and what he brings to the telecast. I think it's just it's exciting, and I wish there was more of that. And not that the other guys are not good. He's just really, really good. Not that they're bad. He's just really, really good. So I mentioned A-Rod, but Carlos Correa is going to be good for a long time. He's 23 years old. He gets it, right? He just really gets it. And I was listening to one of the interviews, and apparently he said that, I guess it was Carlos Beltran that said to him, you know, the girlfriend, now fiance, travels with him sometimes and says, you know, if she makes you happy, then, you know, be with her. And so last night he pulls out a rock the size of, you know, a mountain. It's probably bigger than the World Series ring, and drops down on a knee during the post-game interview and says, will you marry me? How just cool is that? So everybody's asking me, how do you plan this? You're getting ready for Game 7 of the World Series. So he asked one of the guys in the clubhouse and said, if we're winning, you know, I don't want to jinx it, but if we're winning in the ninth inning, I want you to bring this out to me. Right? So, like, no pressure there. You got to win this game, because not that she wouldn't marry him if they lost, but it just is the most amazing story to be right there and for him to be a world champion. And now, you know, obviously get the girl of his dreams. So congratulations to that entire roster. You know, Altuve, who should be the MVP, you know, he endured the early losing seasons of this ball club when they were losing 100 games and more a year. And he has become, he's just a firecracker. You know, this little person, you know, is just nothing short of amazing. There was a shot last night where Craig Biggio picked up Altuve and had him over his shoulder and was kind of spinning him around. Now, Craig Biggio is not a huge man. I mean, Craig Biggio is not 6 feet. I mean, maybe he's 5'10", 5'11". But he picks up Altuve, and it was just a really cute moment, right? So it was. There's so many of those moments. I'm sure that we're going to remember them. We're going to see more. The celebration parade is Friday, and the city's pulling all that together. That's going to be nothing short of amazing. And I saw a tweet from Mayor Turner late last night or early this morning that said they're doing it Friday because of the players' schedules and trying to make it later in the day. So, you know, it's just excitement for this city. Justin Verlander. Think about this. Justin Verlander came to this city, came to the Astros at the very last moment before the trade deadline. Like, it was seconds before midnight, before the trade deadline, before the deadline would have come and gone. And he had a no-trade clause. So he got to decide where he would go, if he went somewhere, if what trade he would accept. He had that clause, and he decided to come to Houston. And so he got here, I guess, August 31st. He was undefeated as an Astro. He got the loss in Game 4, I believe. He got that loss on Saturday night. But he has been just a big boost. When you talk to the players and they talk about the difference, and it was different about 2017 than in 2015, the last time they got to postseason, you know, of course, they have matured, right? But also they talk about having a Justin Verlander, you know, come in and be a part of this pitching rotation, just the cachet and the credibility that he brings because of how good he is and how much he's done, and the experience he has. They talk about a Carlos Beltran and his leadership as a veteran. If, guys, you remember, Carlos Beltran was an Astro before, when they were in the National League, right? So Carlos Beltran and Astor again, not as a starter, but as a veteran in that clubhouse. And so I had somebody ask me, you know, why is it such a big deal? People keep talking about what he's meant in the clubhouse. So think about it. Play 182 games. And you play 162 games. You play all these games. Your baseball really starts in February, right? They go to training camp late. The pitchers and catchers report what, late January, early February. They go through a spring training. Their spring training is longer than any other preseason for any sport, you know, football and, of course, definitely not basketball. They go through spring training. The season starts in April. It's November 2nd. The season just ended. So November, December, they won't play. So you basically, you really have 2 months off, maybe 2.5 months off, because you don't really get all of January. But you're also, you got to keep working in terms of being in shape and being fit. So this is, you're with your teammates a lot. You're on the road for half those games. So you're on the road, you're traveling, they usually, if the game is a 7:30 game, a 7:20 game, they show up at the ballpark usually at maybe 2, 3 o'clock, and they're there till 10, 11, or, you know, as we've seen in some of these, you know, games later. So you are spending a lot of time. So my point is, leadership is really key. The tone in that clubhouse, how it's set. So you've got a lot of young, energetic guys. They by all accounts, they're just all good guys, you know. They like each other. There's not any misplaced ego. You have to have a level of confidence to succeed, obviously, at this level. So they have that. So they've got the confidence. But they're having fun. I mean, like, there's fun in the clubhouse. There's energy in the clubhouse. And there is, it's just a good group. And then you also now have this veteran leadership that is so needed. And you see the difference that it's made because they all talk about it. They all talk about the difference of having a guy like a Carlos Beltran be in the clubhouse with them, who has been in the game for so long and has done so much. And then you see him get his first World Series championship, his World Series ring, be a champion after playing in the bigs for 20 years. 20 years. It took him to get a ring. So, you know, you have that story. You've got the Beltran story. You got the Altuve story. You know, we have, you know, Correa, who's now, you know, engaged. And what Alex Bregman has been doing at third base has been nothing short of exciting. You know, he has made some incredible defensive plays. He's giving you some big hits when you needed it. He's produced some runs. And so, just all the way around the board, we talked about McCann. You know about your pitchers. We mentioned Verlander. You know, you've got Dallas Keuchel, Lance McCullers Jr., who came in and has played well. Morton, who had a good outing in game four. I mean, in game three, I guess that would have been, and was great in relief last night. Brad Peacock, who didn't even know if he was going to make this team in the spring, you know, coming in and getting his first save in a World Series in game five. I mean, there's just, I'm missing some, but, you know, Marwin Gonzalez, I think, during the National League Championship Series, after one of those wins against the Yankees, I think he had a big night at the plate, and then he went home, and his wife, you know, went to the hospital and gave birth to a child, their third child, like 1 a.m. And then he was back at work the next day because, you know, it's not over. So it is just, it's a team of stories. And if you want to use the destiny, I think sometimes destiny is overused, but I think it's appropriate here. I'm okay saying that they are a team of destiny. They are, yeah, nothing short, it's been nothing short of exciting. You know, A.J. Hinch, who seems to always be kind of even keel, right? You know, he comes in, you know, after a loss or after a win, and not that the losses don't matter. But what it says is that he's handling it and he's processing it and he's getting to the next place. And then after, so if you don't get too high or get too low, you can somehow manage to keep those emotions on some sort of a, you know, balance level. You're in good shape. And guess what? It's not just in baseball. It's not just in the NFL or in basketball. It's really in whatever you do in life, right? So if you can, on your job or with your kids or, you know, with your spouse and you know, if you cannot get too high or get too low and you can kind of manage your emotions, then when something happens that challenges you, you're better able to deal with it because you're kind of on a – you got some balance. And so those, that's one of the things that we learn from sports, right? We can integrate that into what we do into our, in our daily lives. So I don't really know. I just wanted to – that's where that came from. When I think about A.J. Hinch, I just see that. I see that from him. And you see it from a lot of the guys. I mean, yeah, everyone's exciting. I mean, they're last night. They won the World Series. It is the first time the Houston Astros have won the World Series, have won a World Championship, right? It is only they're only this I'm going to tell you, they're not the second team to win a World Championship because people talk about the Rockets, and I was fortunate enough to cover those Rockets championships. They beat the Knicks in Game 7 in the 93-94 season, and then they swept the Orlando Magic for their second championship the following season, right? So I got a chance to cover those two seasons. But we also had four Houston Comets championships, right? The Comets won four WNBA titles, and they won it back to back to back to back. And so I heard some of the guys in a couple of the stations this morning saying, yeah, well, you know, it's the Comets. But it was a championship. It was nationally televised. Back then, it was the Summit. The Summit was sold out. The city was behind them. It was exciting in the city. And so you have the Comets were world champions. Of course, you have the Rockets who won the NBA championship. The Houston Aeros way back in the day in minor league hockey won something. The Dynamo have been winners. And so now we have the Houston Astros, which the franchise has been around since, is it 1962? I don't know. My mind's a little tired today. They came into the league as a Colt 45, played in the eighth wonder of the world, the Astrodome, for years. Until they moved to Minute Maid Park. Actually, they moved to Enron Field, which then became Minute Maid Park. And so congratulations to the Astros, the organization, you know, Jim Crane and Jeff Lunau and what they've put together, even all the way on the marketing side, the earn history, the earn it. When I saw that slogan, when they unveiled that slogan before spring training, they always do this, you know, a media luncheon, and they unveil, you know, some of their promotions for the year. But the earn it, I just thought that I liked it then. I just liked it. I thought it was a, it had a great look. It was catchy, and it has really resonated, right, throughout the whole season, but especially through postseason. And when it, you know, people are talking about earn history, right? But we have to earn it. Everything that we do, we have to earn it. And those Astros have earned it. They started out the season at the top, playing well, being the team to beat, with by far the best record in baseball for a while. They had a drop off. They had a bit of a lull. Then they picked back up and finished strong. And now we're talking about them as world champions. That's the Houston Astros. Or world champions. They have won a World Series. The city of Houston is has been nothing short of just exciting, right? The Astros shop in Minute Maid Park was open last night and is open for 24 hours. The Academy stores opened at midnight. When I got to the Academy store over on 59, kind of between Shepherd and Kirby, it was, I don't know, was it 11:15 or so? It was about 11, and I couldn't even get off at Shepherd, right? The traffic was so bad, and then I looked on the other side of the expressway, the traffic coming north, getting off to make the, it was just, the feeder was backed up, so I said, let me go to Kirby, and maybe I can try to loop around and come in the back way. It was traffic everywhere, and this is for people just to park, to line up, to get in line to buy the Astros World Series paraphernalia. I had a friend who, I think it took her, when she got there, she said, there's probably 2,500 people in line. I said, really? So there's nowhere to park? She said, no. There's no, not only is there nowhere to park, it's going to be really difficult to even get over here. So I was like, okay, well, let me just try. When I got there, I said, yeah. I was on Richmond by the park. I mean, I just couldn't get to it. But my point is not that I couldn't get to it, but that's the kind of energy. People were out in line, wrapped around the buildings, just to get their World Series hats and shirts and stuff to have for today. You know, you're gonna have, there's going to be more, but people wanted it today. They wanted it last night. They wanted to show up at school, or on their jobs, or wherever they go with their repping for their Astros, and I think that is super exciting. And listen, we didn't even talk about really any football stuff today. I did get into it with Jimmy Lee because he is a lawyer. He's one of my legal experts I like to tap into. He's a Harvard lawyer, which is how he knows Mayor Turner. They've been friends since law school. And, you know, he talked about the Papa John's issue, you know, with Papa John's being a sponsor of the NFL and basically complaining about sales, feeling like their relationship with the NFL is not giving them what they expected it to. And also Colin Kaepernick filing the collusion lawsuit. So I wanted to get that from a legal perspective. But there's been so much else. There's been trade. Dwayne Brown is no longer a Houston Texan. He is a Seattle Seahawk. There's the Bob McNair comments that happened last week. There were other trades around the NFL. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo was traded from the New England Patriots to the San Francisco 49ers. Just marinate on that for a minute. You know, that's a clear case of the Patriots saying, you know, he's going to be a free agent. And they're not going to pay him, right? They're not going to pay him because they've got Tom Brady. They're not going to pay him what he could probably command on the open market. So, you know, let him go someplace where he can have a future, where he can start to play, and get him out of the conference. They don't want him to still be in the AFC. So they sent him to the 49ers, and I imagine he will play some this season, and then he'll get a big fat contract in the offseason, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, there have been other moves around the National Football League this week, but I think the biggest story that we didn't even get a chance to talk about was Texan owner Bob McNair making the comments that just started a firestorm and how people are reacting since those comments. So, you know, he made a comment about can't let the prisoners, you know, the inmates run the prison. And there are some who say, well, you know what he meant, inmates run the asylum. But the point is, you know, he did give a clearly manufactured apology. You got to take a person at their word. But, you know, he didn't really own it. And then he had a second apology that was even also more of, that's not what I meant. I didn't mean the players. I don't know. I meant the officers or the staff. Anyway, it was a bad look. It was bad, right? It wasn't good. But let me tell you guys something. Back when there was I'm going to tell you this before we get out of here because I think this is important. And I want to end on a high note about the Astros, but I want to give you this little perspective about the National Football League. So when Tex Schramm was running the Dallas Cowboys, right, he was the president of the Cowboys, and there was the NFL strike. Was it in 82 or 87? And Tex Schramm made the comment that it's been wildly talked about in NFL circles. I think some of the current players probably know because I'm sure the union always reminds them of this conversation where Tex Schramm said, you know, we're like the ranchers and you guys are like the cows. We can always get more cows. And I think it's that mindset that ownership kind of has because they own, it's their investment, they own the teams, and so you work for us. Like, you're the help. And you're not a partner. And I'm not saying that's wrong, right, because you do work for them. I don't like the whole help concept, but, I mean, you're not the partner. You work here. Now, there are some companies that want you to know it's a partnership, right? But the owners on the team and the players are part of the labor force. And it's just a reminder, in case anybody forgot, how those relationships sometimes can kind of bear out. And so I think the Bob McNair comments remind people of that mindset, right, that we're just labor. You know, it's why the just play football is so offensive. It's why the just play your sport and don't have any other input because you pay you a lot of money, right? You're making a lot of money. How many fans do we hear say that? They make a lot of money. Okay. So if you're well paid on your job, does that mean that you should be treated any kind of way? So my point is this. It has not been a great week for the National Football League. There are people who have thoughts about what, you know, locally what Bob McNair should do, and, you know, the inmate comment because of the issue with incarceration and people of color, especially men of color. Then he should, you know, they should ask him to help with that problem. And so what I say is, understand who these owners are, understand their history, and look at the owners who have started to kind of break from the ranks of that mindset, who have kind of broken from the ranks of what they all think. You know, I would tell you the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, he's had a little bit of different, a shift in mindset about, you know, some of the stuff as it relates to maybe Colin Kaepernick. And I just think that there are some owners who think a little differently. Clearly the 49ers owner, Rob York, because of his support for Kaepernick and even, you know, matching his money for it was training or something they did in San Francisco, but it was in the tune of about $1 million. And so there are some people who may be willing to, you know, collaborate on how do we make some of these problems better? How do we make an improvement? You know, what's the next step? What's the end game? But, you know, I don't think the answer is in a bunch of new football fields and, you know, mentoring programs. Those things are great, but if they can put their name on and take some pictures. I mean, if you want to, you know, affect change, then we've got to change our mindset and we've got to look at what can really happen. And we've got to support people who are doing the work and who are in the fight. So that's all I'm going to say about that, because we will talk more about what's happening in the National Football League and what's happening with the protests versus the boycott and the owner of the CEO of Papa John's, you know, kind of whining about, you know, his that Roger Goodell has not handled the protest. He hasn't handled it the right way. There are people, I don't eat Papa John's, I don't really eat pizza, not many places delivered for sure, but they say it's not very good. I don't know, so I can't jump on that. I can't say his piece is bad, but I get that, you know, people are not fully supporting maybe some of the sponsors, but that is what protests do. It's not just because, I think y'all need to hear this, and let me say this, it's not just people who are protesting players who have been taking a knee. It is the people who have also been boycotting the league and the league sponsors because they feel that Kaepernick should have a job. So I think it's both sides. We don't hear about the boycott side. We just hear about the protest side. But I think there are people on both sides who are saying, I'm not doing the NFL this year, and the NFL is seeing it. Now, they're still getting good numbers. You know, they're still making their money, because if you're a season ticket holder, they got your money already, right? They don't get it each game. They don't get it this week. They've had it, right? So they've already cashed it. They're spending it and about to get it again for next year if you're going to come back and be a season ticket holder. So with that said, we're going to end on an exciting note, right? Astros are the World Series champions. The city of Houston is again at the top, right? After dealing with all that happened with Hurricane Harvey, it is really exciting for the city of Houston. Maximum exposure for something as positive. You know, it's a positive fitting. It's a great way for this city to try to, you know, interject some excitement and some life and some happiness to a lot of people who, frankly, are still suffering. So, again, as always, thank you for being a part of Chalk Talk, and thank you for switching over today. We had to switch over because I didn't want to have those signal issues on the other platform. But thank you for being a part of Chalk Talk today and every week. All right, so follow me on my social media platforms here on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Kim White Davis. I'm going to be posting throughout the next few days. I'm going to have stuff live from the parade. I'll do Texans this weekend. I will also get a Rockets game because, you know, Rockets, listen, just got a note, HISD has canceled classes so they can allow students to celebrate the championship. So with that said, we are out of time. Check out, make sure you get that. Make sure if you got kids in HIC that you've got.